good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. We're here.
We are calling our guests, setting up our computer, running around like chickens with our heads cut off. And you know what? That was our own fault because we were here early.
that's how we operate, though.
I know. We were messing around with the previous show.
We get total utilization
right, so
out of our time.
So much to talk about right now.
Oh, there is so many crazy things going on. Not the least of which is the Starbucks burning down at Berkeley. By the way, I reached out to our as soon as you can get in, that'd be awesome. Oh, but Bob's waiting because I again didn't do it the way we always do it because we never do it the same way. What the heck? So you're listening to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan,
and I'm Bill Cundiff.
The way we always do it, but we never do it the same way. And I'm Bob Martin, at any rate.
Yeah, it's like a last night at church. The song they were going to sing was 616 in the book. And he goes, oh, yeah, but I put that up there backwards. And I was like, okay, that's funny. And the lady behind me is like, so does he mean 615? What is he talking about? Is 516? She was agonizing back there.
He means 919.
It was actually pretty funny.
919.
I'm like, 616, huh? All jokes are not delivered in the same manner. speaking of which, all elections aren't received in the same manner either. What the heck? Got chaos, huh?
Total chaos.
Total chaos.
Should we thank our sponsors?
Oh, do it.
Yes, absolutely. Powerhouse Solar.
No chaos there.
No chaos at all. You want to go see Bruce and Sue, and if you have any solar needs, you want to go see them, talk to them, they can fix you up. Very professional.
Got to figure out if it's a good deal for you. They're really good at that. I know they came out to our old house.
Oh, yeah.
Gave us the rundown. And we were
showed us a whole plan. We were actually going to put a big array out in a field. And, they wrote it all up, drew it all out. And
How it would work, how much it would cover and all that. Because, irrigating our field using our well was like...
Yeah, it was gas expensive.
It was becoming gas expensive. It was not great.
Yeah. Go talk to them, and they'll do you a good deal. I guarantee it.
And they started here in, 2002, 2003? I'm not looking at it, but they've been here for a while, and bottom line is they're not going anywhere. I guess there are a lot of fly-by-night solar outfits, so we wanted to make sure you know they're the real deal.
Yeah, there's folks out there that want to do a lease and all that kind of thing. You don't want to get wrapped up in that. So give them a call, 530-275-5600. It's Powerhouse Solar.
Or on the web.
Or on the web at powerhousesolar.com.
Ding.
Ding. There you go.
Nice job, Willis.
He was making me sweat. I had to listen to his entire message on his answering machine before he picked up.
You're like, oh, we're not doing that again, are we?
He was sweating you, Bob, making sure that you're on the ball this morning.
Always super spooky.
I was out doing Windows, so, you know.
That's right, because you're what, 2 o'clock?
Yeah. Actually, we have pretty nice weather here in Chicago today. So we're in the 40s, 45.
That's too cold.
Wow.
That's cold for us.
So balmy in Chicago, huh?
Yeah, we're having a good time.
Very balmy.
Yeah, dodging bullets and everything.
I mean,
better doing the nice weather than, climate.
Well, yeah, after, I talked to you the other night and you told me you saw Bill Ayers where you were having coffee. I was like, wow.
That's like 2 years ago, yeah. We're out at Ghirardelli's Ice Cream. And he's sitting out there having coffee with one of his buddies. So.
Ew.
Just a guy in the neighborhood.
Kind of a mixer, as you can see.
Yeah, no kidding.
He didn't scream, he's got a bomb!
Everybody already knew.
Oh, yeah. I ran.
It was implied.
It was a quick hot fudge sunny with bananas, and I was out of there.
Oh my gosh. So we should tell people who you are. This is going to be kind of it's a lot of stressful stuff out there today. Every day. There's just a lot of stressful stuff.
Every day, so it's...
people are losing their
minds. I'll get out my serious voice. And what we are going to talk about, I guess I initially had made inquiries with you. We had chatted for a little bit about talking about our new appointees and the Supreme Court. We can start there on our national security interest and how that should play out, so...
Yeah, and the person you're listening to is Bruce Moran. He is a National Senior Advisor for Security Solutions Technology, and they focus on strategic planning for national security issues. So he works with the government, departments, agencies, think tanks, corporations. He's a project guy.
Yeah. good humor guy on the street when I need a coconut ice cream. Got to cover all the bases.
And he can spot a terrorist when he knows his name and he's been well publicized.
Oh man, yeah, you're telling me the chocolate eclairs you got to really watch out for.
Stay away from the eclair.
There's a live one.
It doesn't have that that custard filling that I remember from my first job working at Winchell's Donuts.
Oh, man, those were great.
Don't eat the crumb donuts.
So, as we're looking at the Supreme Court, you know, we're looking at Neil coming in out of Colorado, Gorsuch, and I think it's an excellent pick. He's a family man, good Episcopalian background. National security-wise, he's on the ball. That's my bottom line on it. If I want to go into his economic understanding of how, you know, our country's run, he backed Little Sisters of the Poor, as you know. And if you're looking at the Little Sisters of the Poor, that's the Catholic hospital system. And, well, there's over 600 Catholic hospitals in the United States. So when you're making a judgment on one small group, you're making a judgment on all the people. And I think they run like 1,400 retirement kind of homes too. So you're affecting a lot of people.
Oh yeah, we've got a hospital and a fairly large retirement home here in Reading as well.
Yeah, the nuns and the priests really disciplined me when I was a kid, so I can really appreciate that.
our nuns were really good at basketball.
So it was very good for me, you know, inner city. And, you know, we all played ball together and things like that. And the nuns would come to the games, and the priests would be around and help, you know, guide us in our times of need. You know, so
I got to stay at the convent with my...
All our friends. And it was a... It was a very positive experience, and it was very helpful for me to develop the discipline back then to carry on to do this kind of work later, because it gave me basic discipline, and later I developed the critical thinking skills to go in to do crisis readiness and crisis preparedness and national security. Those are all the foundations you need to come from a good household, good parents, and, you know, make sure your life is stable in a way, even though everything around you can be in chaos. So...
Yeah, because if you bring the chaos inside, nothing good happens. Yeah, I stayed in the convent when my grandfather died when I was like in fourth grade, and our nuns were fun. I mean, they played basketball and they, you know, they ran around. They were pretty fun, and they had
dodgeball.
Well, you got your own room at the convent. Yeah. I had my own room. It was like, wow, this is awesome. And I was the oldest of five kids, so obviously things were always a little bit. You know, moving around at our house. You could never find the tape. You could never find the scissors. You know, that stuff was always someplace else. It was never in the drawer where it was supposed to be. I went to, when I was in the convent, I had to do a project. And I'm like, sister, could I get some tape? And she goes, oh, it's right there in that drawer. I opened it. Oh, tape, scissors, ruler. It was all in the same drawer. I'm like, I'm doing this. I'm coming back.
I'm going to be a nun.
I don't think that's actually a calling, but...
Become a nun, always know where the scissors are.
But it changed me.
But getting back to that,
I
was working on a Christian genocide. And we'll come back to more of the
we digress.
Appointees.
Yeah.
And the Catholic Church was helping support that. And that was what we knew about 5 years ago. And then Congress had enacted about 3 years ago laws, or I would call it more of a resolution to acknowledge Christian genocide was happening in Iraq and Syria. So one of my friends here is the president of the Syrian Christian organization, Marty Uriman, and we knew exactly. His mom was stationed in Erbil, helping the Marines, and then down in Baghdad. So I think she's still there. She missed a wedding. He had a wedding last year. He just had a baby. So, I mean, that's how serious it is. People need to understand that. I'll get serious now. Christians are being persecuted, and it's genocide. So we got to take that under consideration. I think as we look at President Trump, he understands that completely, and that'll be part of his program. He got the safety zones he wants to set up there and help, you know, stabilize the area rather than have a bunch of people from those areas become refugees, and that's a crisis we're dealing with now. But let's get back to... Well, I want to get back to our appointees, Ian. Do you have any ideas about Rex Tillerson? You know, I think that was an excellent choice. given the situation we have today. And the last time I think about a person appointed like that, they appointed two envoys during the it was a Truman and then the Roosevelt era, and that was Avril Harriman and Paul Hoffman, and they ran the Marshall Plan. So this is kind of that switch in leadership, switch in thinking. If you look at what they're doing at the Heritage Foundation, ATR, and the Wall Street Journal, they call it Economic Freedom Index. They're shifting back to the business model, how to get people, the ordinary people on the ground taken care of, rather than doing economic development programs that usually fluff up the people in official positions in the foreign countries, but it doesn't really help the people on the ground. So they're trying to get back to the basic principles of cost-benefit analysis. And what that entails, well, do you have any ideas on that? Because I can talk a little bit more, but...
No, keep going.
I'm just kind of curious with the current appointments, as far as the national security, do you feel pretty confident that this is going to be a good team to...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about Rex. So what's Rex, what's his capability? He knows everybody around the world, and he's been to a lot of the countries. And what do oil companies do? They build. Mm-hmm. Then they got to build in areas, and what do they have to do? Provide security.
Sure.
So he knows the security dimension, top down. Then he knows how to protect the rigs or work with the local governments. We have, like I said, since the Marshall Plan, we haven't had people of this caliber come in to actually run the State Department. They actually knew business.
Right.
And knew how to take care of business.
Well, everybody complains.
Just a second ago, we're talking about economic freedom. And that's what President Trump is now talking about now. He's saying jobs, 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 jobs. That's the same thing as economic freedom for a third world country or a developing country. It's
sure.
Jobs, 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 jobs. That's how they get off the ground. They create market hub centers. You know, they create a lot of jobs in a small area, and cottage industries pop up, and kiosks pop up, and you have a lot of different really wonderful economic development in the small circles that make it big for a shopping center later.
So going over there and setting up shop, getting business, or, you know, say oil companies or whatever go over, it branches out. I would think that the local communities then would be pretty receptive to companies coming in and expanding and creating jobs and creating opportunity for the locals.
How about,
that's right.
How about, boys, we talk about
that in terms of private partnerships that you're talking about?
Yeah,
does happen, and that's one of the benefits of having Rex Tillerson. What I'm talking about is how they're going to change the dimension of the whole State Department that way.
Right.
That'd be awesome. Hold on 1 second. We'll come back. We'll chat more about that.
Okay.
Because we are already tardy. We started tardy. We're going to continue tardy. There'll be 2 hours of tardiness today here at We the People Tardiness.
We will be back.
We're chatting with our guest, Bruce Moran, who's a national security expert. And, you know, we like to have experts that aren't boring, so we'll bring him back here in just a second.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
State Department theme song.
There you go.
That's perfect. So what we're talking about is the Department of State being the pivot point for national security overseas,
mm-hmm.
and the business model being the, probably you can say it's the new mission for them. And as I had summed up earlier, the last time we seen that was during the end of the Roosevelt and beginning of the Truman administration with the Marshall Plan. So you had brought in Avril Harriman and Paul Hoffman, who actually ran it. They were separate and distinct from the State Department because they knew they could get usurped. I don't know if you knew that. They had their own office.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they knew how the State Department operated, and they had their own office, and they'd reported directly to the president.
Well, that was a good thing.
Yeah, well, same thing's going to happen with Rex. You know, he's going to have to figure out how to re-educate, retask, and reorientate the mission of the State Department to conform to what they need for economic freedom. And have it from bottom up.
Run
that way, and it's how the diplomats are going to have to change the way they're talking to other officials in foreign countries.
Do you see him going in and kind of cleaning house right off the bat and getting... Because, you know, we're hearing all these stories of people quitting and, you know, people not doing what they're supposed to be doing and not honoring the president. I mean, I don't think he's... I think he's kind of a no-nonsense guy. Do you think he'll go in and really clean it out?
Yes. In simple terms, yes.
Okay.
In bureaucratic terms, it's going to take some time because you have people at all different levels and all different forms of operation. Not only you have it domestically with the State Department, but you have all the embassies and consulates overseas that need to be understanding the new mission of the State Department.
Right. Everybody has to be on the same page. That's the thing. It just seems like they're all on different pages on how they think things ought to be run.
Mm-hmm. Nothing's really been done like this for about 30, 40 years, so how you go about and actually run a State Department in terms of a business operation. As you know, we had different people coming in from the Senate, and, you know, they have their ideas about how to run it, but it's according to the old bureaucratic ways of
the way
the department's been run for 30, 40 years.
And that's really what we need to get away from. Obviously, it hasn't worked very well.
Yes, sir.
Well,
I'll talk to you officially.
Well,
I'm talking to another.
And let's face it, it was run by Hillary, who was busy fundraising for the Clinton Foundation on her own server, blah, 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 blah. And regardless of where you fall on that whole thing, mm-hmm. none of that sounds like how you want your tax dollars used to run a really important agency in our government.
Well, and it totally influences your foreign mission, too, in all those countries. So
so how many people have bailed out of there, and what's up with that?
Right now, working for the State Department, I don't know if you know that, it's 68,000 people.
Dang.
So you have a lot of people that are professionals and are diplomats and are support staff and are on desk. You call them a desk that handles, you know, in the State Department at Foggy Bottom, that handles that part of it. Then they have the desk, and they have the actual mission. That would be the consulate or the embassy. So you have these different factions. And within the embassy, too, now here's what people, I think this is good for people to understand, they have those functions. And the foreign policy function is what? We have intelligence, we have diplomatic, we have military, we have economic. Now, with the change of the mission, we're going to be focusing on the economic side. And it's economic freedom, I would call it, and that's the better way to look about how to handle the people on the ground, the ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Donald Trump got elected, and that's how it doesn't change anywhere in the world. It's just the same thing. Got to help the ordinary people on the ground. That's what grows your economy. That's how your economy prospers. That's how economic freedom existed from, you know, John Locke, and we go back to our own history and our country and the formative stages of understanding how this came about, you know, versus a collective way versus an individual sovereign way.
Right.
Ayn Rand. So we have these ideas inculcated into our culture, which are very helpful for other nations. And like I was saying, it's the third world countries, the developing countries, also the failed states. That's where it's most likely neglected and has a real hard chance of coming on board. So if you look at, you know, we figured there were seven hot point countries, Yemen, you know, that would be one of those hot points. There's competing factions in Yemen, and that's Al-Qaeda and ISIS. So, you know, if you look at a hot point, you want to say, and if you look at ISIS and Al-Qaeda, they both declared war on the United States. Osama bin Laden, I believe it was in 1998, he wrote a fatwa. The fatwa was 30 pages long.
Wow.
Yeah, so these are the kind of things we're looking at. You know, and Rex Tillerson has the idea about how he wants to handle it, and then you have it integrated with what? It's the Department of Homeland Security for border security, and that's what we're talking about, the refugee crisis, and then we're also talking about how it integrates with what? The Department of Defense and how they're going to execute the operations program for Iraq and Syria. And he asked them to put it together in 30 days an operations way of handling what's going now in Iraq, because we have that big undertaking in Mosul right now. So that's their, I would say their capital's in Raqqa, but that's their second biggest base of operations. So once that falls, you know, Omar the Chechenian was killed like 6 months ago. He was their biggest operational guy in that sector. He came in from Chechnya, and he changed his name to Omar the Chechenian, you know, Omar. So a lot of these people coming in from these countries are going back, and that's what President Trump and Mike Flynn are really worried about. I mean, I am too. We're really concerned about how this is playing out and how these people are getting across our borders. It's not necessarily by flights. It's by coming in the southern border, northern border. You know, they come in different ways. It's not always what people think it to be. And they can be spies for them. And they have IDs made for them. So if you see something coming across in a green card, and maybe somebody is using a false ID, and you can't trace it back. So if you have those seven countries that don't have ways to trace back identities, you have a huge problem.
Well, yeah, I heard the other day that I think it's in Iraq or Iran, one of those countries over there, they crank out tens of thousands of passports. They have
Syria,
the equipment.
Iraq, because they took over the government, and in Iraq they had the passport-making machine.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
So, how? I mean, that's going to be a huge problem.
Oh, you want one here? Here's one for you. Right. Where do you want to go? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I'm joking about it, but it's so serious, it's so bad, and it's so out of hand that we got to get a handle on it. And President Trump knows that, and Mike Flynn know that, and they're working with their hands tied behind their backs because it's taking so long for everybody to get approved and to get into their jobs. You know, not only do we have to approve, you know, the appointees that are going into the cabinet, you got undersecretaries too.
Right.
You got people in that need to come in right away. And if you got pushback from the bureaucracy or other insiders or from, you know, say, people from the Democratic Party, that's their position, you know, and they don't want to follow an order, then you got a real problem unless you get your people in office to really move the mission forward.
But isn't that
and give a presidential directive and make sure it's being carried out? And I don't mean carried out just that people understand it. You have to make sure it's carried out operationally.
Right.
And you got to check to see if it's being enforced. That takes a lot of time and effort and a lot of people to do those jobs.
Well, I think the delay in one respect could be a good thing, because you're going to find out during this delay who's on board with your ideas and who isn't, so that when you do when you do get your guys in place, you know who to replace or at least keep an eye on. Don't you? What do you think of that?
Partially true, but the real players will not come forward. They'll have all the other people do it for them.
That's true. They'll lurk.
Right.
Yeah.
But
they're going to be the ones who cause the action to happen, but they're not going to come forward. And they're going to be the ones who do the insidious type of behavior to usurp, undermine, I would call it the U.S. Constitution.
Right.
And the president's executive orders.
But
I would
still,
say the national security matter of that.
But they're still,
from my perspective.
If they're in a position of leadership, though, currently, and there's maybe subordinates out there, you know, bucking the system, aren't they ultimately responsible for those people and have to answer for that?
Well, that's what we call obstructionist. And that's what was the biggest obstructionist time we've seen in our history? Well, we had two of them, but the one that was during the Civil War.
Civil War?
Yeah, that was probably the biggest one.
Hmm.
And he had this kind of thing happening back then. So if you look at that obstructionist problem, that's why you're getting to what we're looking at, the nuclear option in the Supreme Court. Because they changed it three times. It was a supermajority, and then they brought it down to 60 votes. Then they bring it down to, you know, just need the nuclear option, which is the you know, one vote over. So, which could actually be Mike Pence, you know, or
yeah.
somebody, you know,
yeah.
the president.
Yeah, what a dumb move.
I don't think it's so.
That's like that's like hubris, you know, thinking that you're going to be in power forever, so you might as well do stuff like that.
Oh, no, you know why they did a nuclear option? Because they thought Ruth Ginsburg was going to retire.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah, so they put it in place, and she didn't retire, and now they're sitting up with their backs against the wall. Because if she does retire, then they're really, or Kennedy, or,
ding, ding,
you know,
too.
Clarence yeah. Thomas said he might, so, but that's one for one, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
We can actually replace two more that would be more of a, I would say, a constitutional lawyer, following the dictates of the Constitution, as
sure.
founded by the Cut of Seven Principles, as brought forth by our founding fathers.
Rather than people who are legislating from the bench.
Yeah,
which is making everyone
from the bench,
crazy.
Or thinking as a document that can be changed.
Oh, yeah, true.
You know, politically, to suit the times. And that's what happened in the Seattle case. You know, the federal judge in Seattle had wrote, I would call it a dictate of his personal...
interpretation.
Yeah, his personal philosophy, ideology, and that should be separate and distinct from what you're doing to support the president's executive order. So then this is another one of this... these kind of things that are obstructionist.
Right.
And you can look at it as taking into account the people that are refugees, but it doesn't take into account if we get attacked in a national security matter he's trying to deal with. You know, there's two ways of looking at it. But the president is commander-in-chief, executive orders written to take care of the American people, not to take care of refugees. See what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a big difference there. So... you know, who's going to be on first base with, you know, going to second after you hit the ball? I'm not going to be on the base with the judge. You want to start from home plate, getting your, you know, top swingers in there. And we're talking about, you know, Jim Mattis, Jim Kelly, Rex Tillerson. You want those players up there for national security. You don't want a federal judge dictating how to, you know, national security's run. You know, that's pretty bad.
Do you think
from my perspective? You know, I think it's a solid perspective, and it's sound and practical, but in terms of the disposition of federal judges, because they're there for life, I think that, I don't know how you call a federal judge to on task for that. That's what I'm saying.
Right. All right. We've got to take a quick break here. Thank our advertisers.
Okay. Good.
And we're here with Bruce Moran, National Security Advisor. He's actually in Chicago. I shouldn't say we're here with him. We're here with him on the phone. Gotta love the phone, huh? Without that, yeah. We'd just have to talk to each other every week.
That'd be tough. Spend a lot of money on airline tickets.
We all know how that would work out. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. Your new theme song, Bruce.
For sure. Or China.
Nice.
So, Bruce, we're talking about
good one, Bob.
Talking about these judges. Do you feel that, or do you think the whole judge obstructionist judges are going to plague this administration?
Is it going to be Mission Impossible?
Yeah, every time he tries to execute something, that one of these federal judges is going to sign some delay?
I don't think that's going to be the case. It's on certain particular issues like this, where they can have input to stall an executive order, but I don't think you'll see many. If it becomes an obstructionist, then the Supreme Court's going to have to step in, you know, and that's when you have Neal in there and Roberts, and they'll have to make a decision on it, saying, you know, you're bringing in your own demagoguery and your own ideology. It's not what the courts are for.
Right.
And I don't know if what the Supreme Court needs to do to stop it at that point.
That's a decision that's
about the tenure and what the role of the federal judge is and what they're supposed to do in a fair and equitable way. If they're bringing their own personal philosophy and ideology, demagoguery, then you're creating a whole different vacuum that may be against the Constitution in carrying out an executive order.
Right. Well, this
so that's what I'm talking about. This executive order and these commander-in-chief, if they're doing these things to counter the Constitution, then I don't know what this might set a whole new precedent in identifying what this really means. See what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know what the legal talking points are on that on both sides.
Well, it's unfortunate, but the appeal on this is going to the Ninth Circuit, which I think we all know how they're going to rule, and so then it'll just get bounced up to the Supreme Court. So
you never know with those guys.
It is a big delay. I mean, this you don't get stuff shoved through the Supreme Court in a timely fashion. Now they get to pick what they hear and in what order, don't they? The Supreme Court,
of course, but they can make it a priority if it's a national security problem like this is.
Right, right.
So this is definitely a national security problem, and it'll come up sooner than later. So by procrastinating with the obstructionist in there for Neal, it's not going to look good for them. No way, and you know, no way can you look at it as them looking to abide by the Constitution, the principles of the Constitution, and all the national security problems that are based around it that they're not taking care of.
Mm-hmm.
You can lay some of the blame, if something happens, on the Democratic Party now, because they're not getting other people in to take care of and run the government, the federal government, like they need to.
Right, and I see that as something that I think is going to backfire on them in the next elections. I think if they keep this up, people are going to be sick of it. And you know, the ones that are up for re-election next time might have a problem.
Yeah, and
surprise.
Neil's from an area where a lot of them are up for re-election. So if they give him a rough time, they know what the consequences are.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to talk about it in that kind of way, but I just want them to do the right thing on national security. And all this obstructionist kind of policy they're, you know, inculcating into the system, whether it be in Congress or in the federal judiciary, I think that's not right from my perspective, because I look at the bottom line. We got to, and overseas, people don't even think about it. They're just thinking about refugees coming in. When you're screwing around with, and I'm going to call it screwing around with national security, you're not making the firm determination that all our people that are living overseas are subject to the same retributions, because these people are able to exact carnage on our own people, American citizens overseas.
But see,
talking about covert operations, people working in SOG teams. We just lost a Navy SEAL in Yemen, and you know, President went over there, and you know, it's very hard on us. So,
but see, they're not talking about that when they, you know, talk about delaying these cabinet picks.
They
don't recognize, at least from what I've seen, they don't recognize
people dying.
They don't recognize the possibility of bringing people over here as a security risk, which flabbergasts me, to be honest.
They're all marching around in the airport with "We love refugees, we love immigrants," and I mean, I get that in a broad sense, but why? I mean, I've had conversations with people who just flat say, "I don't understand why we have to know all about these people. They're just coming here to flee violence." People actually believe that.
I mean, we had, just take a simple case of Somalia, because they're on the list, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had those people up in Minneapolis, St. Paul, with the knives.
Oh, yeah.
And they were, you know, just
well, so everybody knows. Yeah, everybody knows Somalia is just a vacation destination if you want to go have a good time. I mean, I don't know why we let anybody in from Somalia. I mean, I understand they're having basically a civil war over there,
right.
And the place is run by warlords, and that's unfortunate. But at some point, don't we have
Al Qaeda now? It's ISIS. I mean, they have both, and they have competing factions there in Yemen. So, and as you understand it, was stated earlier that Al Qaeda and ISIS had declared war in the United States.
Right.
It doesn't matter what hat you have on. We know that these people want to kill us.
Exactly.
Well, how big a joke is California right now on a scale of 1 to 10? Are we hammering like 20 right now in the make fun of people who are complete idiots arena?
Oh, you're talking about the riots that are supposed to be protests.
No, I was actually talking about how we're going to, you know, they voted to become a sanctuary state.
Oh, now they're going to separate.
Go ahead and let them all in. Yeah, let them all in. We will take care of them all in California and then become our own country.
That is terrible.
Yeah, it is awful. And
I mean, to even have them go there and think that it's important to them in a time of crisis of our country, not only between the parties, but what needs to be done for national security, for them to even come up with something like that, it's unfathomable to me that they can even think that way to distract from the real issues, the solutions. If I look at what's going on in Chicago, we have two people dying every day from the gunshots, you know, and we have crime and drugs, and it's filled. That sector is all filled in Southern California, too, with the same problems.
Mm-hmm.
They got the big drug cartels running through there rampantly. You know, they have huge problems. And they're not saying how they're going to deal with that. And that's what we're talking about. How are they going to deal with that? What are their solutions? They have no solutions. We're trying to come up with plausible, common, practical solutions. And they're not saying anything like that.
Yeah.
They want to become independent. So, okay, what does that do for you?
Yeah. Well, their solution is to take in more people because obviously it's not a problem at all.
Well, I guess
which is just crazy.
I guess another issue I have is when they talk about refugees, you know, by definition, a refugee is somebody who comes here because they're fleeing some problem in their own country. So we you know house them until the problem is fixed, and then shouldn't they go back at that point? Otherwise, they're not refugees, they're immigrants.
People seeking asylum get to stay here for a year.
Right, but does anybody ever leave?
They have to get a green card, and that's the law. But
mm-hmm.
What's going on, and I think, let's go back to the cause of this whole thing, and this was my stake in the game 5 years ago. ISIS was formed. They drew the line in the sand. They wanted regime change for Assad. And what the regime change came consequences. The average person, average Iraqi, average Syrian person wasn't taken care of. First they became homeless. Then they were fleeing. Then they became destitute. Then they were all congregated in certain spots. Some of them went. There's a bunch of them in Jordan right now. They go down Route 1, you know, from, it's their safety zone. But then they're in, southern Turkey. But we know that. But the thing that happened was, it was the UN, European Union, and the United States. They think that regime change for Assad was correct. Whether you accept or reject regime change, it's not the problem. It's just the consequences of all the refugees, all these people from Iraq and Syria that were left homeless, they weren't taken care of. President Trump talked about a safety zone, and that should have been established 3-4 years ago. So the people had a place to go and have a place to stay. They have food, shelter, you know.
Yeah, but
water.
Again, it's temporary.
I would have armed them.
It's a temporary
situation.
You want to
arm the people to go back and take their homes back, to take their land back.
Right.
To fight ISIS. And that wasn't done.
Well, that's my point.
I mean, that's the consequence of poor decision-making from the UN, from the European Union and from the United States.
Well, doesn't it say something too that when we look at the refugee migration, that the majority of them, now you can tell me if this is true or not, but aren't the majority of them like 18 to 25 year old males? That's not a typical
They're fighting age
immigration problem. That's or a refugee problem. Otherwise, it'd be women and children.
I don't know the exact numbers, but I would say your bottom line, what you're saying is, the people who are able to fight should stay there and fight
sure.
for their own country, for their own freedom, for their own, that's to get their homes back, to get their land back.
Right. It's not our
fight.
Why
are they running and expecting other countries to take care of them?
Correct.
Well, the other thing is,
I don't know the numbers, that's what I'm saying, but what you're saying, the truth in what you're saying is, we made big mistakes, and we had to make sure that we were providing them with arms so they can fight ISIS.
Right.
And the Kurds took it up, the Peshmerga. And we supported them, but we also need to support the Christians that were being persecuted, and eventually their homes were marked by ISIS. I don't know if you knew this. They came around, marked all their homes the day before.
Ooh,
yeah,
that's not good.
So it's like the Holocaust.
Right,
they came and started persecuting them. They took their children.
Hold on, we've got to take a really quick break here before the
sex slaves.
Top of the hour.
They started crucifying people and roasting them. And all kinds of different things that happened. You saw the beheadings. I mean, that's what they did. That was genocide.
Absolutely.
That's not talked about.
Hold on one second, Bruce. We've got to come back with that.
About it. I mean, some of the Assyrians and some of the Rockies talk about them being...
We'll be right back in 2 minutes. We got to take a really quick break here. We'll be at the top of the hour. Bob's killing it on the immigration songs. Okay, so Bruce, go back to the part where we were so rudely cutting you off.
Well,
and make that point again, because it's really important.
The idea about not having a safety zone established when we knew that the ordinary citizens first became homeless, then they became destitute.
Right.
And then they went into a period where they fled into Jordan and then fled into Turkey. But at that time, it wasn't as bad. I don't think people realize this is the biggest refugee crisis since World War II. So we were up to 8 to 9 million people. So when they had the regime change strategy, they didn't provide to take care of the ordinary people. And that's what President Trump is emphasizing here. That's how he won the election. The average person needs jobs, but you got to take care of the average person. What was he talking about? Law and order. And over there, it's safety and security. And then what he talks about on foreign policy, it's stabilization. You have to have these countries stabilized so that people can feel comfortable with their governments in their provincial areas. We call them states here, but they call them provinces there. So that's the bottom line. And they didn't provide for this. And I was saying the UN, the European Union, and the United States policy didn't take into account what happened to the average person on the ground. And what we just finished talking about right when the commercials happened was the genocide and how the doors were being marked by ISIS of all the Christians the day before. They come through there, and then they would rape the women. They would persecute the males, crucify them, roast them, behead them, and the kids they use as sex slaves. So that's the genocide portion of the problem that exists there, and I think they should have refugee status and asylum here in the United States.
And
they should be given a priority.
And this is basically Muslim on Muslim crime, correct?
No, it's Muslim on Christian crime.
Okay, so
they came along glued when they.
So these are the same Muslims that we're trying to keep out of our country that we love so much that these folks are saying we're persecuting. See, that's the part I don't get.
Now the Muslim situation is different in and of itself, you know, and we have to talk about our terrible planning of how the refugee situation happened. We terribly planned, and these people, like I said, they became homeless, then they had to travel someplace, and they couldn't find jobs, so they were looking for jobs, then they became destitute, and they needed food, shelter, and water that wasn't provided for them. So you take about a year and a half period, 2 years, and this was the largest refugee crisis since World War II, and you get up to 8-9 million people. That's a huge problem, and nobody addressed that.
And I don't argue that point. However,
no, I'm saying it's a humanitarian crisis they never addressed.
Right.
But why can't we address it?
As bad can be.
Right. We need to address that now, but we need to address it over there. I just don't think we bring them over here.
Oh no, I'm saying the same thing.
Yeah. You guys are saying the same thing.
That can be established.
Correct.
And that's the areas where you bring food, shelter, and you can provide arms for the males.
Absolutely. We've got to take a break to talk the hour.
No, we're done.
Oh, we are.
Mr. Moran is going about his day without us from here on out.
Ah.
He's going to clean windows or watch the Super Bowl or
clean downstairs.
Fiddle around.
Yep, and then go to the corner and, you know, we can get.
Yeah, go spy on your local terrorist.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Bruce, for coming
thanks,
on
Bruce,
with us.
Thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome. God bless America. God bless you for having the program, We the People. And God bless our whole country, everybody in it. And let's get this resolved.
Absolutely. And when, as this thing develops, we'll have you back.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we're coming back with Dr. Lyle Rapacki. We're going to take a different spin on the same thing. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.